You are listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more. Welcome to episode 44A, the special episode of the Colorado 400T Review. We've got a special edition today, and we're going to talk about the first one of the Colorado 400TSs to be released to the public. And with us on the phone tonight, we have Daryl. Welcome, Daryl.
Hey, good to be here, and good to be talking about this cool new piece of technology.
So you've got one in your hands, huh?
Yep. Right now, they're only available through REI in the U.S. I guess the European market, though, has had some time to play with this. They've had theirs for a while. I've only had about 24 hours with the device to really play with it and only find one cache to make my determinations on this unit. And we'll get to some of the details in a few. But the summary is that there's a lot of potential in this unit, but it just isn't there yet for us cachers. Despite all of its promise, it just doesn't really make it. And we've been waiting for this next generation unit to replace Firefly's rather sick Vista CSX, or CX actually. But I'll be taking this one back, returning it and getting a 60 CX or CSX, whatever is available, as those are pretty cheap right now, and I think a much better value.
Well, that's kind of disappointing, but at least we can wait till the price drop, $600, you know, for a new receiver. So let's get on to the details, though. Tell me a little bit more about the unit that you have in your hand.
Well, a good size comparison is probably the CSX, the 60 CSX, that is, which this is essentially going to replace, and about half an inch worth of the antenna is missing, but otherwise it's about the same size. And then for those upgrading from the eTrex, the Vista CSX, the face of that unit, you know, the whole face is about the size of the display on the 400T. So this is a huge screen. You know, it's easily 50% bigger than what you had on the Vista or earlier eTrexes. It's probably even bigger yet. As for the weight, this is more substantial than anything that you're used to dealing with before. It comes in with batteries. I weighed it at 7.7 ounces. The 60 CSX we have comes in at 7.5, but the Vista CX is only 6.2, so it's a substantially heavier unit than we're used to. One of the coolest new features, though, is on the back of the unit, they're now using a rail system. So any of your mounts just slide in. You don't have to worry about screwing on that little nub and having it unscrew or whatever. It just slides in, locks on. Very nice. It has a watertight back, much better than the older anything that I've seen. The 76, I'm sure, was a little bit better even than this is. But it does make it a little hard to open, especially when it's brand new. Getting the batteries in and out is rough. But it does take two AA batteries like we're used to. Now, though, it does support alkalines or NIMS, and there's an option in the menu so that you get the better metering for the NIMS, because it was always a problem if you used NIMS before. But it's a big, bright, transflective screen, gorgeous outdoors, beautiful indoors with the backlight, but it does cut down on your time. The rock and roller wheel that we've always heard so much about does work pretty nicely, and it has three buttons. Aside from that, you have two soft buttons on the front and the power button on the top. If you take a look at the top of the unit, though, right around the power button there, there's this flap that lifts up, and you have your antenna connection and the USB connection. Any questions on the hardware itself before I move on to connectivity?
No, it sounds pretty much just like we had talked about earlier in the show. Besides the rail thing, that's definitely a cool feature.
It is. It's a little bit stiff with the included carabiner, which is this plastic rail bracket that slides on, and then it just has a carabiner hanging from. Quite frankly, I wish that we had a more traditional belt clip with it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm happy with this. It seems to work pretty well. The problem, though, that I had is in order to get at the batteries, I have to actually take off that belt clip. So you have to constantly take that on and off, and I'm a little bit afraid of the wear, and it just takes a little bit of time to get it on and off.
All right, great. Let's move on to the software.
Well, actually, let's talk about the connectivity a bit first.
All right.
And one of the things that we noticed right away is when you plug in the USB cable, it doesn't matter what mode you have the GPS set to. As long as it detects that there's a computer there, it goes right into disk mode. So that's a little bit of a challenge, as things like GPS Babel-based devices don't work with the GPS because it's in a disk mode, not in a traditional Garmin software mode. So when it goes into its GPS, or in its disk mode rather, you have to load the files either through your computer, just in the regular Explorer or Finder, whatever you're using, which is really easy because you just take the GPX file, drop it right into the GPX folder, and there's your geocaches. Or profiles, you load in your images, whatever, just nice and easy, just as if it's a disk. However, if you want to load waypoints, you have to use the Garmin software now. There's no way currently, at least that I'm aware of, that you can load waypoints onto the unit except through Garmin software, which is available now for Mac and Windows. They have the Bobcat project for the Mac users that you can download for free, and that will talk to your GPS, just like the, what is it called, the Ways and Trips, I think, for Windows users. So now let's get into the software a little bit, and then we'll get into the geocaching after we go over the way that the unit generally works. This is a great start to the next generation interface. It's one of the best I've seen from any of the manufacturers so far. It's cohesive and intuitive, but it is different enough from our previous units that you're going to have a learning curve, and it can cause a little bit of trouble there. At times it looks, though, like they might have designed it for some kind of future touch interface. You've got some buttons on the screen that just kind of have that touch look, so I'm wondering if it's not foreshadowing maybe a future version, you know, a 800T or something like that. So we'll keep our eyes open for that. All of the navigation happens through the soft buttons and the wheel, and you rotate the wheel to go up and down through lists or side to side through some of the lists. And on the inside of the wheel, you have a directional pad, essentially. You're kind of pressing against the outer edge of that wheel to move around, and then in the center, you have your select. So that is really easy, really nice, very one-handed. I am very impressed. They do live up to their promise with the one-handed operation there.
So does it kind of remind you of like an old-school iPod?
Very little, but yes. It's a very different feel because the outer edge actually rotates, and actually the whole wheel rotates. So as it's rotating, you know, the whole center is moving as well. So you can easily do it probably one-handed from the inside as long as you don't push too hard to activate. So it is a tactile experience, whereas the iPods never really were all that tactile.
Okay.
Even with the original click wheel, where it was actually the motion wheel, it still had a very different feel. I can definitely see, though, where they would have taken some design cues from that. It's easy now to customize the backgrounds and even the soft button colors so that you get that look and feel like you'd like. You know, I've gone and created a Cachemaniacs background and dropped it in there, changed the buttons to green, and it looks pretty much like a Cachemaniacs flavored GPS. Ice and Rye even did one that he sent me to test with his image and changed the buttons to gray, and it looks pretty cool. And hopefully you'll be seeing a little bit of that in the Ice and Rye video zine when I do the video for him on that before I take the unit back.
No, I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah. It will give you a good idea of how the thing works and really looks like, much more than we can do through audio only.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
There's profiles for multiple applications so that you can quickly change from one to another. One of the things that I found, though, is that the maps, even though I'm using the Topo 2008 maps, which are what's loaded into the 400T, I'm using those same maps, you know, previously on my 60 CSX, these maps are much easier to understand, much more crisp because of this nice high resolution, just really high quality color display. And even just, you know, I had the topo lines before, now I have some color rendition on the map, and it just really does make it much, much easier to see and understand these maps. One of the problems, though, is that it is slow to power up, and it does chew through batteries, because you are using the light on the display a lot more. Right now, I'm looking at less than 6 hours on a set of fully charged 2100 milliamp hour NIMs.
Mm.
The 60CXX, I don't even know how long it lasts, because I had to go out for a full day, come back, and then change batteries.
Yeah.
So you are going to be going through many more batteries with this unit than you did with your 60 or Vistas or pretty much anything prior to it. And one of the other problems that we've run into is that it doesn't remember the display settings on a power down. So anytime you have to power down the unit or plug it into the computer, it forgets all those settings and it doesn't come back.
Mm-hmm.
So every time you have to go in and open up your power, you know, hit your power button to open up your light settings and turn it up again. Same thing happens when it gets into its low battery alarm. It's like a 4-tick indicator. When it gets down to 1 tick, mm-hmm. it shuts off the backlight or side light, the display light, completely and will not allow you to turn it back on to save the battery, which is pretty cool when you think about it. But if you're trying to get the most out of your batteries, it can be a little frustrating.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Now, we did have a chance to try the wireless transfer as well, and it has a very short range. We had to stick the units right next to each other to get them to reliably transfer, and the negotiation is incredibly slow, but it does work. It took us about a minute, maybe a little longer, to do a transfer of a single waypoint, and almost that entire time was just the negotiation between the two units. So if you're sending more than one file or a bigger route file, it's probably not going to take much longer. But it is a slow transfer process, and that really kind of bummed us out, because that's one of the things that we were really looking forward to.
Mm-hmm. So you said you think that if you were to, say you were to do like a whole pocket query of 500, you don't think it'd take 500 minutes, so, right? You just think it'd take fairly like about a minute or so if it once it negotiated?
Well, it's probably going to take more than a minute for a full 500 point pocket query, but it's certainly not going to take 500 minutes, because I'd say at least 45 seconds of that was just negotiation. Probably okay. Even more than that, you know, even 50, 55 seconds. The actual file transfer, the waypoint transfer, just flashed across the screen. So I'm thinking, you know, you're probably looking at less than 5 minutes for a 500 waypoint PQ.
All right, now let's move on to the geocaching features of it. Tell us a little bit about what you thought with the geocaching features.
Well, unfortunately, they've taken away functionality from us, even though they've given us a beautiful paperless caching mode. And we'll talk about the paperless caching mode first, because this really is a step in the right direction. All you do is you drop a GPX file into the GPX directory on the unit, and you're ready to go. There's no prep, there's nothing to do. You just drop those files in, and you can drop in multiple files. The 400T will show a list when you go into the geocaching mode of 6 boxes, which have either the geocache name or number, which you can select, or you can search for something by spelling the name, the distance to the cache, and the direction. So it is a nice mode. Doesn't give you as much information as the older display does, which mm-hmm. gave you the waypoint and the distance right in this list with like 8 to 10, depending on which unit you had. But it is a nice display, easy to read. Selecting caches, you just pick one, and it comes up with a map showing you where the cache is with the little pin. And in relationship to your location, you have your little arrow with the guidance line on there. And it tells you the distance, the time, estimated time, gives you a box with the cache type icon, difficulty, and terrain as stars, the size of the container, and the number of trackables in there. So it does give you most of that information you want right there. But when it's time to look for more information, you hit the soft key in the upper left corner. You get a menu of show description, full screen compass, full screen map, or go to location. So if you select that show description, it comes up with a beautiful display of the cache icon and name, the difficulty and terrain is stars again, the cache size, the number of trackables, the GC number and who it was placed by, the nice long description of the cache complete with bold, which is something that things like CacheMate really didn't handle, lasts several logs, and it seems to change based on the number of logs that are in there. I've seen anywhere from a couple of logs to as many as it looks like 10, but I haven't been able to track down exactly how many logs are in there.
Wow, that's cool.
So you have more information than we're used to seeing with most of our paperless options, and that's really nice. And then below that, it gives you the list of the trackables that are in the cache, if there are any. If you want to see the hint, you just hit the left soft button, show hints, and it switches all of that description information over to just the hint. So it just basically toggles back and forth while keeping the important information like the GC number and who was placed by up top for you. Now, here's where it gets inferior to the previous versions, which is there's no ability whatsoever to edit the existing caches. You can't add notes, you can't change notes, can't change or edit coordinates at all, you can't add any caches, and you can't even mark it as found or did not find or anything like that. If it's in there, it's in there. There's no way to remove it from the list. There's no way to add to that list in the field.
That's not good.
No, it's not good at all. And because it's doing this through those GPX files, it won't even show on the map as a waypoint. You don't have those nice icons. So that's really kind of a pain in the butt for those of us who like to go caching, kind of by the seat of our pants with just a GPX file. And you look, oh, there's a huge cluster of caches over here. Well, you can't even see those caches now.
So you almost need to have two different GPS units, one to do the broad overall map and this one, if you were going to do something like that.
Yeah, and I really hope that this is stuff that's going to be corrected through software updates. It seems so far like it is all software changes, so I would expect them to do that. But even if you want to try to go back and do it the old-fashioned way where you load them as waypoints, you still don't get the option of marking them found. You know, we've actually gone back and we've lost some of that cool functionality we had in the old units of being able to say, find the next unfound cache.
Mm-hmm.
And the new waypoint manager doesn't allow you to sort by the type of icon, so you can't even go in there and say, show me all of the found and unfound cache icons that you know you had prior to this. You can't delete selectively either. So working with the waypoints, we've lost some of that control that we had before in even selection and deletion. So they need to definitely get some waypoint activity going on there and give us some of the functionality back.
So, okay, what would you say overall about it?
Well, overall, I think that we have an excellent start to a great unit. If you're looking for something with the biking, kayaking, hiking kind of stuff, it's a great outdoor GPS. You know, it has the connections to your heart rate monitors and, well, to the Garmin heart rate monitors and the speed and cadence sensor. So if you're looking for the nice functionality of a fitness outdoor GPS, I'd say go ahead and use it. And we have found a little bit of a workaround for some of the inconveniences of geocaching. It's still not as good as using your older Garmin unit, but what we've discovered is that you can load your GPX file into the unit itself, then go through Bobcat or Ways and Trips, and load that GPX file in a second time as waypoints. So you have the caches in there twice. Now your limit, though, is that you can only put 1,000 waypoints into the Colorado. So if you had 2,000 caches, you wouldn't be able to have all the caches on there. You'd only be able to pick like your first 1,000 that you want. But what you need to do is go into the setup menu on the Colorado, go to the map settings option, hit the left soft button when you're in the maps option for the additional options, and go to the advanced. Then you want to pick the zoom levels, and you go to the user waypoints, and you have to crank that up to at least 50 miles or better. We've had some issues even at 50 miles, so I'd recommend cranking that all the way up to 500. We haven't had as many problems at 500. But then you go back to the map, zoom in to at least a 1 mile, maybe even a little tighter scale, then zoom back out, and you should start seeing those user waypoints. Now, you may have to zoom in and out again because for some reason, the current software doesn't seem to want to always load those waypoints. And the only way we found to get that to work is to zoom in and out. So it works, but you know it doesn't work as well as it should and isn't as elegant as we're used to. Now, the other thing is when you load the waypoints in there, you're going to have them again twice. But what you can do is on those waypoints, you can actually go in and edit those. So if you want to mark them as found, you can put a little F in there instead of, you know, just overwrite the G from the GC number, put an F in there, or a D for a DNF'd cache. And then you can go and do the search by spelling in the waypoint manager to find those again. But, and you'll still have to change the icon manually if you want to do it that way, because you don't have that nice functionality of, I found this cache, move on to the next one.
So overall, you would say wait a while until software updates to buy it.
Definitely wait a while. And, you know, I'm hoping that they make it fairly quick, but my first inclination is that we're looking at least 6 months before this product is ready for geocachers.
So you're going to return yours and wait 6 months on yourself, right?
Yeah, I'm definitely taking mine back. I'll be getting a 60 or maybe even a 76, depending on what they have over at REI Cheap, and using that for the next probably 2-3 years. Because those are great units. There's really not a huge reason that I see to upgrade to the 400T. As long as we're happy using our CacheMate and the GPS or the geocaching functionality that's built into those older units, it's still a great solution. And it's a, you know, even though it's a two-handed solution where you've got your GPS in one hand and your PDA in the other hand, you know, that is kind of nice too, because you don't have to worry about one unit failing.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, hey, I'm glad that we could do this show. Thanks for explaining a little bit about the Colorado, and I'm glad that you got a chance to get your hands on it and give us a little bit of feedback so we don't end up spending our money on it until it gets a better software version.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. Like I said, this is episode 44A. We do live recordings of these shows every Tuesday at 9 p.m. 44B will be this coming Tuesday, where we'll be talking about events. Make sure to join us. You can find all of our show notes at geocachingpodcast.info.